This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Welcome to Uprise Radio with your hosts Koshin
and Zan.
That track was Magnificent by Partyboy69. We are starting with that because today we are going to be talking about Magnifica Humanitas. I think I got the name wrong.
I've just written tech versus Pope in my notes, so that's the name of the text for me now.
Yeah, it's the Pope's new encyclical that's been released. It is a new direction from the Pope down to the rest of the Catholic Church about a lot of things, but mainly about how the Catholic Church should treat AI and new digital technologies.
And I'd like to come clean with my sins that I recommended that we both section off and read various chapters. And I have come in hot this week, yet again, not having done any of the readings. And I just need to name that at the beginning.
I think that's definitely fine, because once you hear the passion in Zan's belly, you'll hear why. It's a lot. It's a lot to take in.
I did resist the urge to get ChatGPT to summarize it, though, out of respect for the whole juice of the text. Yeah. So that's a step.
I got an AI summary sent to me, but I didn't actually read it. But I heard that it really... Because say what you want about the Catholic Church. The language that it's written in is very... It's very well written, even if it's disagreeable in many parts. It's a very well written take on... I don't know, the modern world and many of the challenges facing all of us, but definitely through the lens of the Catholic interpretation of the world. So I guess we're not going to start with chapters 1 through 3. It's a 40,000 word document. It's pretty meaty. Do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, maybe a tiny bit of backstory to Cardinal Pope Leo. He's a 69-year-old from Chicago. He is the first American to be elected as the Pope of the Catholic Church in, I think, across of 267 popes. There's never been someone from America. 217 have been from Italy, and that's across 2,000 years. And the topic of this encyclical has been something that he's been quite passionate about almost since he was ordained. He, I think 2 days after he was elected, noted that the choosing of his name, Pope Leo, was in regards to the messaging of a previous encyclical that came out on the day that he released it many, many years prior. It was called the Rerum Novarum, and he thinks it's still very relevant in today's age of AI, especially to do with the social question in the context of the first industrial revolution. And he kind of sees this new dawn of AI as a new industrial revolution, and therefore the Catholic Church is having social offerings and teachings to be given forth. Hence his 40,000... I keep wanting to say pages, but it's Word document.
Yeah, he references that other encyclical many times, especially in chapter 4, which is all about workers Also, just a little background. Now that we've looked at this thing, we're basically experts, but we should explain to the audience that an encyclical is a document. I wrote down it's a document produced by the Pope that is shared within the Catholic Church to provide authoritative advice on questions of theology or church doctrine. So it's a way for the Pope to use his authority to explain to the rest of the church how they should respond to emerging challenges or changes in the world. I also wrote down that I think we should take note from an organizational perspective. I think that's, if you want to run if you want to have a organization that lasts 2,000 years, I think it's a good idea that if you elect someone at the top, that they get to send a thing down that says, by the way, here's the strategy moving forward. I've been in a lot of leftist groups where this would have been 10,000 meetings trying to come up with the first line. It's nice that they just write 40,000 words and they just say, here it is. Let's figure it out from here.
I actually feel like I did a flip. As someone who has been a serial producer of 40,000 word documents of research reports and have always been very disgruntled at people telling me to turn them into Instagram tiles and shorter captions. When I looked at this document, all I wanted was a meme and an infographic, and I really started to really resonate with why people find it hard to read such huge, dense texts.
Yeah, yeah, it was dense. It could have done with an executive summary at the start.
Not by ChatGPT.
Yeah, yeah. What did you find when you were reading?
A few interesting things. I think I was first caught off guard by, well, even just the way it was launched with Anthropic at the center with him. Mm. I thought it was very interesting that he chose to present this document with a huge kind of AI conglomerate, and thought it was really curious as to what the position was between Anthropic and Pope Leo, and to kind of question what was going on behind the scenes in terms of, their relationship and what that means for both of them.
Mm. Yeah, there's definitely been a push recently from AI companies and Silicon Valley more generally to create this kind of connection with religious institutions, not just the Catholic Church, but there's definitely been some specific push with for Catholic Church connection. A couple weeks ago, there was what was called the Faith AI Covenant Roundtable, which was a mixed religious event with, I think it was Anthropic as well, organized that. And this one's the Anthropic meeting. It was an Anthropic meeting with 15 Christians from various denominations, so Catholics, but also Protestants and Orthodox. So there's some kind of a push within the AI world to connect with the Catholic world for ethical legitimacy, basically, to be able to say we're doing the work of we want this stuff to be good for people, so why don't we look to someone else? Why don't we look to religious figures to tell us what to do?
Yeah, I saw someone on the internet calling it Vatican washing, which
That's
I
really good.
Thought
yeah.
was a great new term. Mm. And I also thought it was interesting to note that prior to this document coming out last year in May 2025, the Vatican news site published a warning against a AI-generated deepfake of Pope Leo, which was praising Ibrahim Traore, who is the current ruler of Burkina Faso. Found that interesting, because, of course, Burkina Faso was mentioned. But also after this, he was approached asking to around the question of an AI Pope avatar being made, which would essentially be an AI pope that could be given answers to people. And he said, if there's anybody who should not be represented by an avatar, I would say the pope is high on the list. Mm. So I think I really held that in mind when reading about the questions of risks to employment and identity was kind of understanding his own skin in the game and perhaps the threats that have been posed to not just his own job, but also the institution of the church as well. And that like what AI can do to that.
Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, there's been this kind of idea about using AI for ethical guidance more and more, which he really pushes back against in this encyclical. I think that's a really valid criticism. I don't think that's a good idea. At one of these meetings, I couldn't find the exact quote, one of these tech guys was asking a priest, saying, you know, wouldn't it be better to just have a legal system where the judges are just AI and then, you know, you can just process everyone. It'd be so much more efficient. And the priest just asked, you know, doesn't a human being have the right to be judged by another human being? And it stunned all these AI guys. And it seems like such a simple question, you know, shouldn't human beings be involved in ethical decision making? Shouldn't we not be trying to, you know, turn that into an algorithm or a machine process that we can just point at and say, just trust that.
You know? I think what confuses me about a lot of this is the argument that is made many times that this type of technology can be dangerous because it's seen as objective. And he makes the argument that that's not the case because there's bias and injustice coded into it. And I think that feels really confusing to hold, given that there's bias and discrimination coded into a huge amount of things, and that affects a lot of institutions. And thinking about the different ways that, like, say with science, when it's been wielded and done by humans themselves, has been still been coded with bias and discrimination long before AI came along, and that's been shown so much in how a lot of medicines were only tested on men, and so adverse drug reactions in women weren't tested for or weren't tested on different types of bodies. And so to kind of raise this question that we won't be aware of the bias that's being coded into, I feel like ignores the current and historical context where that bias has always been there and will continue to be there. And that bias is something that I think affects also religious institutions with how they treat matters of gender and equity and reproductive justice.
You were saying off air some criticisms that I thought were very poignant about the lack of internal awareness of the Catholic Church within the way that he writes about kind of, pushing back against, you know, certain injustices, but without really kind of being able to grapple with them himself within the church. And some of it is addressed. I mean, there is an apology for the Catholic Church's involvement in the slave trade in the past. And he just talks about the need to make sure that it doesn't happen again. But of course, there are more injustices within the church today that aren't mentioned, that he seems completely, there's a huge blind spot in this document.
Which is strange considering he mentions the danger of there not being certain voices at the table and then decisions being made that really affect those people. And then I think what first comes to mind for me is, first questions of reproductive justice, which can be incredibly serious if you are in a position where you need emergency contraception after rape and you go to a Catholic hospital and you might not be provided with that. It goes to questions of surrogacy and IVF, and it applies to questions of same-sex marriage and the rights of queer people and like trans recognition. And all of those questions, I think, also require those voices to be at the table, but that's not really addressed here.
I mean, he makes a comment about the need to have dialogue with the victims and imagine yourself as the victim. But obviously he doesn't do that. the church as an institution is incapable of doing that for so many people.
Yeah, and I know Pope Francis prior to him spoke out a lot about needing to decriminalize same-sex marriage. And from the interviews that have been asked of Pope Leo, I haven't found any where he has been willing to speak about the question of same-sex marriage or reproductive justice. He said they are not as important to him, which, again, strikes me as concerning given his position in the church.
We joked about this podcast becoming, or this radio show becoming a Catholic show, but it is fast becoming a reality. This is some deep, we're getting in there.
With one angry trans person here.
Okay, we're going to listen to a quick community service announcement, and then we will be right back to get into this a little deeper.
Like so many community organizations, we need your continued financial support to keep 3CR on air and our community connected and strong.
Consider selecting Auto Renew for your subscription so your subscription keeps rolling on every year.
We love the security of knowing we have your support into the future.
Head to 3cr.org.au or call 9419 8377 and remember to select recurring for your annual subscription.
Hello, you are back with Uprise Radio with Koshin and Zan.
And seeing you did the God-given work of actually reading some of the chapters, are there any that you wanted to mention?
Definitely, I'd love to get into it. So I read chapters 4 and 5, which were, chapter 4 was, I think, definitely my favorite. chapter 5 is about... it's titled The Culture of Power and the Civilization of Love. So maybe I'll quickly go over chapter 5. It goes into a discussion around technologies and warfare and the increasing use of AI in warfare, not just for targeting, but actual decision-making. And he flatly declares that this should be prohibited, that a human being should always be responsible because decisions of life or death shouldn't be palmed off to what he says is the machine, I think he refers to it as. You shouldn't be able to just point at a computer, which is exactly what they have increasingly been doing. The strike on a girls' school in Iran... after kind of not taking responsibility, the US's line has been, oh, well, it was the AI. The AI gave us the target, so therefore we can just wash our hands and move on. He comes out in this document and says that that's, completely unacceptable, and we should build what he calls the civilization of love.
I'm just imagining asking to build an AI prison where all of the immoral AIs can get held accountable.
Yeah, that would be good. Yeah, we should. Just lock them up.
No, I am really anti-carceral. That was a joke, everyone.
Even for
machines.
Wow, that's deep. That's a real position.
I also, sorry to harp on about this, but I will keep doing it. The amount that he talks about love feels really at odds with positions held against same-sex marriage and that type of love. It feels like a very strange selective view of love.
Yeah, I guess I guess they wouldn't see it as a contradiction, but it does feel very contradictory. He also talks about the normalization of war. The fact that war after the world wars was seen as something that we should never return to, something that should be a deviation from the norm. And increasingly we're seeing countries and leaders talk about war as the norm. And he has a great quote that he says that peace, or that they're now seeing peace as a fragile interval between conflicts. And I think he was very real for that. That's what I'll say. He says that it's easier to start a war than to stop it, and that countries are proudly expanding their militaries while treaties designed to prevent catastrophe are being discarded. And then it's so obvious that he's talking about Palestine and Gaza specifically at one point, but doesn't name Gaza, doesn't name any actual, doesn't name and shame.
Jerusalem is named as a...
Yes.
As a symbol for the path forward, though, which I feel like is a strange move considering his politics.
Mm.
Or it makes me less certain about his politics. And why certain things can be named but other things must go unsaid.
Yeah. There's definitely some gaps for sure. I really like this quote, though, when talking about weapons in AI. He says, "Sometimes there is talk of artificial moral agents, as if machines were able to distinguish between right and wrong with greater consistency than a human being. Yet moral judgment cannot be reduced to calculation, for it involves conscience, personal responsibility, and the recognition of the other as a person." And I thought that was a banger. I thought that was really good.
There was actually an interesting critique of this encyclical. I think it was from Richard Dawkins, who there was an argument being made that AI could now be argued to be conscious.
Richard Dawkins' brain is now soup. I don't know if you know that. Very tragic news for you. He's been talking about AI. It's not good. He thinks AI is alive and real. He wrote something that I didn't have the heart to tell you about. I was hoping you'd find out without me telling you. Yeah, Richard Dawkins and AI are not going well. He calls it Claudia, and
wow.
He asked it to read a book, and it said, "This is really good." And then he was writing, saying, "It told me I was the best author, and that's when I knew that it was alive."
Oh, yeah. Leading with love.
Yeah. So I'll just quickly go through chapter 4. It was just, it talks about the accelerating dissolution of the boundary between truth and falsehood that AI is really pushing, because it's allowing you to create false images, false representations of reality.
Such as of himself.
Such as of himself.
Praising Ibrahim Traore.
Yeah. He quotes Hannah Arendt, which is a non-Catholic political philosopher, which I wrote down. So I thought that was interesting. Yeah, he quotes a lot of people who aren't Catholics. He really is reaching in an expanded philosophical range. He's really, it wasn't confined to like just, Catholic teaching. He was really, you could tell that this was an attempt to really try to grapple with like what is going on. This is definitely like seen as a massive challenge.
Mm. Yeah, and I definitely saw his want to speak up about something that I think there's been a lot of criticism for him speaking about the war in Iran at all. So I think for him to continuously make the case that issues of war are social issues that the church need to concern themselves with is, that's something.
Yeah. He talks about the idea that technology shapes the user, not just the user shaping the technology, which I thought was really good. So much of this is Marxist in nature. It's like vulgar Marxist or something. It's like Catholicism and Marxism mixed together. It's very liberation theology, which I think he has some kind of a connection with. You could really tell that there is, there's definitely a critique of capitalism without naming capitalism.
Can you imagine if he left the Catholic Church and became a Marxist?
That would be really cool. Yeah. He talks about unemployment as a grave evil, especially when it's produced by the pursuit of profit. And that work remains a fundamental dimension of the human experience, for not only is it a means of sustenance, but it is also a context for expression, relationships, and contributing to the community.
I found the question of work interesting, especially the parts that we're talking about how AI is kind of encouraged or forcing us to move quicker and kind of favoring people that can move faster and quicker. It struck me as that being a great time to talk about disability justice and how this is, I think, a question that has been affecting a lot of people for a long time, is how certain bodies are prioritized to make the most amount of profit. But again, that wasn't addressed I mean, the issue of capitalism isn't really explicitly name and shamed.
Not by name, but the components of capitalism are kind of individually critiqued without ever actually critiquing the structure of capitalism itself. But it's clear that there is, and the Catholic Church and its history with capitalism is definitely oppositional. The Catholic Church I think this is essentially a reactionary attack on capitalism as a structure. The Catholic Church definitely isn't pro-capitalism. He says that the invisible hand of the market can't be trusted. It's like specifically referencing Adam Smith. There's a tension between Catholicism as an institution and capitalism, but it doesn't. It's a reactionary contradiction. Like he wants to return to a pre-capitalist society where the church is the highest form of power. He doesn't want to progress to a beautiful post-capitalist world.
Yeah, an interesting view of the future when there is a lot of critique in here about concentrating power in the hands of the few.
Mm. Yeah, he talks about that a lot, but never talks about what system creates that.
Or himself in a position of incredibly concentrated power.
Yeah. I mean, he is an absolute monarch, essentially. Like, he is a king. He has absolute dominion over his jurisdiction. He is, he's the infallible leader of the Catholic Church, but doesn't really want to talk about that. I guess that's for the next encyclical.
Maybe the one that we have to write.
Yeah, the self-critique. that's probably all we have time for.
Yeah. I guess
I'd love to get more into it.
Yes. No, I was about to go on a reflection that would probably last for a lot longer than the next 3 minutes that we have. Just some more self-reflection, I think, is what I wished for in this text in terms of the themes of social justice. I think I wish would be applied more to his position and the position of the church as an institution and how it affects people.
Yeah. One day, inshallah.
And till that day, I'm going to play a really nice and hectic song. It's called Why Hesitate by 2XT.
Oh, just quickly, Radiothon coming up. Very excited. Sorry, I forgot. I should have said this earlier. We have a Uprise Radio trivia at Hard Out, July 22nd.
How many questions will there be on the encyclical?
There will be. I hope you better read this whole thing back to front. It's going to be an encyclical themed. No, I'm not going to say that. We'll have a range of topics. Get involved. We'll have tickets up soon. Get excited. And
I think we're going to get some DJs happening.
It's going to be a lot. It's going to be a parade. And the Radiothon, next episode will be the Radiothon episode. So call in, have fun, text us. It'll be a good time. Subscribe in Radiothon. All right.
Peace out.
Pushing on the pace, go. Pressure resonates, simmer never waits. So, move it out, let it detonate, lights.